Welcome to Life Talk with Marietta, where education meets inspiration through the power of shared stories and personal experiences. Here we believe that learning doesn't just come from books alone. It comes from life itself. By sharing our journeys, lessons, and insights, we create a space for growth, connection, and understanding. So whether you're here to gain knowledge, feel inspired, or share your own voice, let's explore life's meaningful moments together, one conversation at a time. We thank our program sponsors, KMAREducation.org and TheBusinessChampion.org. And here is your host, Marietta Kammerer.
Thank you, Rich. Hello, and welcome to Life Talk with Marietta. I am Marietta. More than ever, we need to rely on ourselves and stay true to our beliefs. In a world that constantly changes, authenticity becomes our anchor. Today, we reflect on what it means to live a life that is not just endured, but truly lived, guided by our core values and unwavering commitment to our own truth. Reflection of a Life Well Lived, that's the title. And now please meet our guests, Norma Giannatasio, entrepreneur and Life Talk contributor. Good evening, Norma.
Good evening, Marietta. Good to be here.
Thank you for being with us. Jean Thompson, entrepreneur, songwriter, and Life Talk contributor. Thank you, Jean, for being with us tonight.
Hi, Marietta. How are you?
Nice to have you. Rich Tuthill, our commercial host and Life Talk contributor. Thank you again, Rich, for doing an outstanding job. Good evening.
Well, I'll do my best.
And for myself, I'm a radio broadcaster of 17 years with Life Talk and The Business Champion, and you are joining us in the chat room tonight. For our monthly chat room schedule, programs, and guests, please go to kmareducation.org. Right on the front page, or thebusinesschampion.com toward the bottom of the page. There's always updates for our monthly chat room schedule. And before we get started, let's go over to Rich quickly. He does have some news for us.
Calling all businesses with standout products and services. Get your name out there by joining thebusinesschampion.com directory. Consumers looking for the best? Our directory is filled with local champions just for you. Sign up at thebusinesschampion.com. Call 203-505-3660. Turn your talents into a thriving business with kmareducation.org. Learn how to communicate your value and make money doing what you love. Ready for success? Call 203-505-3660 to learn more. And now let's return to our host, Marietta Kammerer.
Thank you, Rich. And you have just tuned into Life Talk with Marietta. And let's get started. Life is a collection of moments, some joyous, some challenging, but all uniquely our own. This journey through questions and answers is a chance to celebrate a life well lived, embracing the triumphs, growth, and love that have shaped us. So we're going to start with childhood memories. We all have them. We have some beautiful childhood memories, and not so beautiful, but that's not what we're going to talk about. So I like to bring Norma into the conversation. Childhood memories, what is your favorite game you played as a child?
I had a good childhood, so I'm one of the lucky ones. I really have no complaints. Two great parents, very loving home. I don't know. We used to play hide-and-seek a lot, my sister, my brother, and I. That was the big thing because we could all play. That was one of my favorite things. And I remember a game called Pick-Up Sticks, which was in a can, and used to shake the can and drop the sticks out on the ground and try to pick up the sticks without moving the rest of the sticks. I don't know. For some reason, I enjoyed that game. We went roller skating. I have so many memories. I did like ice skating. I don't like the cold weather. So I'm a summer girl. Mm-hmm. I like the beach, but all those kind of games, yeah. Oh, and when
nice.
I get to be a teenager, you got to play spin the bottle when you're a teenager. Yeah.
I see. Quite advanced you are. Quite advanced. Yes. Okay. How about you, Rich?
Well, I was into the board games a little bit. We used to play a lot of Parcheesi, which is an old one from years ago, and, of course, the standard checkers. was another one. And we did play a lot of cards that as I got a little older and started doing a little babysitting for my two younger sisters, we used to play, my older of the two sisters and I used to play canasta, but we didn't play with just two decks of cards. We'd usually play with 20 decks of cards and try to hold 200 cards in your hand. It got a little bit cumbersome, but it was just one of those fun things, and we always did a lot of giggling and eating some popcorn and having a soda or two.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that made you happy?
Absolutely, and it definitely helped pass the time.
Oh, pass the time. So they didn't make you mow the lawn or paint or something like that?
No, my dad really did most of the yard work in that. I mean, I helped a little bit. The big thing would be on Saturday was trash day. Well, we didn't have the garbage pickup like we do nowadays. And so my job was go around to all the bedrooms in the rooms and gather up all the waste baskets. And we'd throw it into the trunk of his car, and then we drove to the dump. And
What triggered this when you said, oh, to pass the time, that means you didn't have enough work to do. If you had been with my father, he would have found something for you to do. That's what I meant. That's what triggered it, you know?
When you're babysitting to get that time out of the way when you're earning probably like 50 cents an hour.
Oh, okay. All right. How about you, Gene?
Well, my most fun times that I can remember, I'm from the Jersey Shore originally. I've been in California for a lot of years now, since I was 22 years old. But in the beginning, when I was living in New Jersey on the Jersey Shore, we lived kind of maybe a couple of miles inland, and there was a lot of beautiful green wooded area. So my fun time was just playing in the woods, making up different characters, making bow and arrows and pretending like we were hunting and playing hide and seek games and just getting lost in the woods for miles into the woods. And for some reason, I don't know how we could do it, we always found our way back home. We knew the woods that well. And so I just love playing in the woods, climbing trees, making different types of things, making rings out of a lot of artwork, making rings out of acorns, and just enjoying that atmosphere was really good. We didn't have a lot of money, so we had to invent our own games. You know, we'd roll tires with sticks and different things like that. But it was kind of bittersweet, but really nice. I enjoyed myself as a kid. Though playing in the woods was one of my favorite things to do. And even till today, it kind of stuck with me, because now even here in California, I go out to the mountains. We live in the mountains where we are right now, kind of in Santa Clarita. So I go out into the mountains, and I like being in the open air, in the trees, near water, and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I kind of did.
Wow. I love that when you said woods. I can. It brought instantly the scent of the woods. When you were in the woods and it was a really hot day, and the shade of the woods, and it had a certain scent. Oh my God, that was wonderful. And I always felt protected in the woods, but I also felt a sense of protection. I didn't realize that at the time, but a sense of comfort playing with mud. And I always cooked, making believe I was preparing meals with the mud. So I was always playing with the mud, creating something, mostly meals, make-believe meals. So I just loved that. And, it gave me a very, very good feeling, you know. So let me move on to the next couple of questions. I really didn't have a childhood hero. Then also there were moments when I felt very carefree when I was with a group of my peers, when we went for an outing with school. I always felt secure when we were all together, the whole class, and we were going somewhere. And it was a day, an outing from a school day. And I always felt very, very happy and carefree with the kids. I didn't have a childhood hero. I don't remember. Certainly my grandparents were not alive. I really I didn't have one. Rich, I'd like to bring you in. What were moments that you felt carefree?
Well, I always liked that. I was lucky that all four of my grandparents lived past the age of 85. So when I was a kid, that was one of the things we did almost every weekend. We would go visit one set or the other. And my dad's parents used to go on trips around the country, and they actually took the Queen Mary over to England at one point. So they had lots of the slides, and we used to see the same ones over again. And my dad would say, don't make any comments that we've seen them before, make it sound like this is the first time you've seen them. And that was always fun. And my mom's parents were more of the farmer type. My grandfather was a farmer, so he would regale us with stories of riding the tractor and doing things like that. And he made beer in his basement, and they have the German background. And so he was had been a shipbuilder and would tell stories about that. So that was always fun for us as kids to visit with the grandparents. And our cousins would sometimes be there at the same time, and we'd kind of go off on our own and play some games, whether it be tag or hopscotch you do out in the dirt driveway. And but yeah, we had some good times. And Gene mentioned about going through the woods that between, I guess, of age like 10 to 15 when we moved into our second home, that I had gotten a bicycle, and we used to ride our bikes through the woods. And the challenge was always to make sure that the person leading the way was the one that wouldn't push the branch out of the way and snap it into your face if you were following. So you had to kind of watch that. And we built forts out there in the woods, up and sometimes in the trees. But it was always just a carefree time back there in the 60s.
But do you, all of you, do you remember the real carefree feeling when we were away from home? Because at home, we could expect that mother or father would you know, have mood swings. At least that's how it was in my home. So, but when we were with our kids, our peers, our classmates, we didn't have that. We always had fun. We always had fun. We laughed. We were silly. Norma, how was it with you?
Same thing. When I became a little bit older and I was able to go out with my friends, first of all, I grew up in Stanford, so we'd go to the beach and went to my grandparents every Sunday, but Saturday was kids' day. We went to the movies together in big groups. We saw The Blob. I remember the movie The Blob in the movie theater. We used to catch fireflies at night, but it was always 10 or 20 kids. It was a big group of kids, whatever we did, and we'd go to the movies that way. 10 or 20 kids would walk into a movie theater, and we'd all sit up in the back of the movie theater so we could get into trouble and nobody would see us, and we'd giggle and laugh and nobody would be mad at us. But it was always a group. Even the beach was a big group of kids catching the fireflies. We girls against boys, 10, 12 kids catching fireflies at night in the summer. I think the summer is my favorite time of the year, because I was outdoors all the time, and I loved being outdoors. You couldn't get me out of the water when I was at the beach. I literally turned into a fish.
Wow.
My mother used to beg me to come out. Yeah, my mother would beg me to come out of the water. I just could have stayed there all day, and eventually I had to come home. But visiting my grandparents, my grandmother was a big influence on me. She was my first hero, I think, was my grandmother. I was very close to her, and she was widowed. And she took care of herself and turned her house into a boarding house. In those days, they used to rent rooms. People would rent a room. And she turned her home into a boarding house, they called it. And that's how she survived, being a widow with no money. She rented rooms out and became very successful. So that inspired me to see her do that at such a young age.
Wow. That's very interesting. That's very, very interesting, you know. Jean, how about you? Did you have a childhood hero?
You know what? I'm going to be honest. Most of my childhood heroes were on the TV set.
Yeah.
You know, I liked them
Lassie.
All. I'd like
Lassie for me.
Superman. I'd like what was this guy's name? His Grandpa Amos. I liked all the TV shows. I really looked up to these people. Just almost like mentors, you know, because the home I was in, it was kind of a whole different kind of atmosphere, because I didn't really have a good relationship with my dad. But, you know, as a young person growing up, you want to look to something to be able to grow, to just become a better person, someone that's not even successful in the monetary way, but just being happy. and in experiencing life. And so I would look up to all these great people on TV, even some cartoons, you know.
You're absolutely right. I didn't even think of that. You're right. Mm-hmm. That's all I had. let's say Lassie. I really, really, Mr. Yeah. Ed. We had yeah. Mr. Ed. Mom knows best.
Yes.
Yeah. And I always found that the woman in the kitchen with the apron and always serving food or clearing the table and washing dishes and cooking, that was mm-hmm. just so, that was the image that I had growing mm-hmm. up. Mm-hmm. So I would feel I was very good in all of these things because I was involved daily. I had to be involved daily with, you know, in the house, in our household, mm-hmm. prepping meals and everything and cleaning the kitchen and everything. But somehow I could really identify with that. I don't know what it did to me that I don't know. I have to go on the couch. But you're so right because I said, oh, I had no heroes. You just opened up that door. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So let's move on to defining relationships. Now, we had some great teachers and not-so-great teachers. So, Norma, I'd like to bring you in. What are some of the biggest impact on teachers that you recall?
When I was in school?
Yeah.
During school? Yeah. You know, I went through grammar school, and I was kind of like not the smartest kid in the room, but I, you know, like B average or whatever. So I found that I was like, just went from class to class. And then as I got older into a teenager, I started to be my own person. As a little kid, I was quiet, a little bit shy. It's hard to believe now that I was ever shy, but I was, mm-hmm. but I wasn't until I was 13, 14, puberty changed me. And I started to speak up and people started to notice me and the teachers started to notice me. I think it was because my brother was 5 years older than me. By the time I got through school, they had all known my brother, who was very intelligent, very artsy, very well-behaved. And here I come along, you know, like this crazy little girl who giggles for no reason. So they kept comparing me to my brother. Every class they would go to, the first thing would say is, oh, are you Joe's sister? Yes, I am. And they would look at me like, you don't act like him, you know. I'm sorry, but I don't know. I think with school, it was difficult because I didn't really bloom till I was in high school. So I don't know that it was a teacher as much as maybe someone I met along the way. Mm-hmm. Either it was in a classroom or another kid that I admired. Then I went to hairdressing school and I adored my teachers there and they gave me encouragement. I think it wasn't anything that when I was younger, it came later for me. I wasn't independent or secure in any way when I was a little kid. I was a middle child, so I have that middle child syndrome where you have to take care of everybody and be the peacemaker. So I wasn't out there, you know, in front of the line. I was like mm-hmm. in the middle of the line always until I got older. And then I realized I could step out and be who I really am, and I was okay with that.
Yeah. You know, as a child, I wasn't – first of all, I wasn't sponsored by anybody, meaning encouraged by anybody. Certainly teachers at that time didn't encourage anybody. Kids were on their own in the classroom to participate or not. So, and you could tell, you could really tell kids who had help at home, you know, with the parents and everything. My parents worked,
the
so they didn't
kids.
Have.
The smart kids got all the attention, too. The real bright kids did.
Here's the thing. I never got the spoken word. So because I had problems focusing, I wasn't interested in the subject, and mm-hmm. I just paid attention to other things. I looked at the, you know, my peers, and some of them, mm-hmm. you know, they were paying attention. Some of them, we just looked at each other, and we started, playing, you know, facial
daydreaming, daydreaming, they call it.
Exactly.
Yeah, daydreaming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So I was more interested in that activity when we were with a group. To me, always represented fun and mm-hmm. Strength. And in a group, I can be silly. So no mm-hmm. matter if we sat in the classroom or we were on the bus going somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even today, when I'm with a group of people, whether I do the radio program, I just have a certain feeling. It's just, I really have to analyze it and you know, to have the exact words. It just gives me such an elevated feeling being in a group of people that I like. It always has from, you know, but anyway, some of the biggest impacts with me, we had real nasty teachers that wouldn't tolerate anything, and we had gentle teachers, and I learned the most from a gentle personality. We were, you know, we could talk a little bit, we could laugh a little bit, he would, you know, call our names, but he wouldn't get all, you know, upset. The other one, you know, he right away you were kicked out of the classroom.
You were, you know, singled out. You were singled out.
Singled out, and
he
taught. You know, I cannot learn if I'm fearful. So the minute he stepped into the room, I had fear, and he hadn't even said a word yet, just by his presence. You know, how was it? How was it with you, Jean? May I bring you in, please?
With me, it was in stages, I guess. In kindergarten, I had a teacher, and it seemed like she was overwhelmed. I couldn't really tell because I was only 5 years old, but it seemed like she was just overwhelmed. I think she may have been a new teacher. But kindergarten wasn't the best for me because I'm left-handed, and she would always take the pencil and put it in my right hand and try to force me to write right-handed, and I hate the whole experience was just horrible. But it kind of helped me because in the future I became, what's the word,
ambidextrous. Yeah.
There you go. So I learned how to almost use both hands. I can do, you know, use both hands now and many things. So in that way it was okay. But I had this one teacher when I was in third grade. I can't remember his name, but he was so awesome. I still remember his face though. He was a bald guy. Caucasian guy, bald guy, he wore glasses, and he caught us eating candy, me and a couple other kids in the class, and he said, okay, I'm going to let you eat candy, but it was Lifesavers. He said, if you bring candy, you got to bring me one. Boy, do we love that. So we brought, it was like, almost like extortion, but it was okay with me because we got a chance, one hand.
I love that.
And he was very interesting, you know, very interesting teacher. And I learned a lot from him, a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I moved on. And from that point, I don't have too many teachers. I did have one teacher that I really liked. It was a lady, but that was the boy in me because she was so beautiful. You know, I do have to remember her face. That's the only thing I remember about her. And then I went to when I got to high school in Asbury Park, New Jersey. It was tough in high school. High school was really tough because, you know, you had to move to all these classes. You had your locker. You had to maintain this. You had PE. You had to shower, all these different things. So it was kind of chaotic in the beginning. But I had this one teacher, my Spanish teacher. I was failing so bad. So he would take his time, didn't get paid. He would stay after school every day for about an hour and work with me and work with me and work with me until he got my grade up to a C. And I learned a lot from him by doing that. His patience, just how he was as a person. And he got me up to a passing grade. And he did not have to do that. And do you know I carry that value till today? It's just funny how you meet people that do that. And from that point on, that gave me a lot of confidence because I started believing in people at that point, you know, because before that, it was just like all the time, it just seemed like you were being stepped on all the time. But he showed me something, taking a little bit of patience with someone who seems like they're failing can do a lot, you know. So I use that to this day. At this point, so it was good. I had a good time in high school. I had some good teachers that I remember, and I remember them because they took the time with me to show that they cared, even though I was a screw up. They took the time to show, okay, you're like this, but I'm going to help you get past that. So it was really good. I liked school. I really did. I do remember those three teachers. I remember the extortioner. I remember my beautiful teacher, and I remember the teacher that took the time to go out of their way to help me. I remember one time I had that same teacher, a beautiful lady. I was in class, and she said, okay, we're going to have a school race. where whoever wins the school, whoever wins this race out of the whole school, they're going to get ice cream sandwiches for the 30 days every day after lunch as a dessert. I said, oh, my God, I got to win that. And so I enrolled in it, and I had to. We had to race every single class. I was so tired, but this was over a period of a week. And do you know I won, and I won those ice cream sandwiches. Oh. I wanted them that bad. I beat the whole school, and then I found out I could run. So I joined a track team when I got in high school. So that taught me something too. So going through those different levels helped me to grow and realize different things in myself that I didn't even know I had. So anyway,
it's precious. It's so precious. It's so precious. Thank you, Jean, for that. Now, before we get into professional milestones, let me go for a quick break.
Want to reach a wider audience? Become a sponsor of our show. Get your brand in front of engaged listeners and elevate your business. Contact us at 203-505-3660 to learn more. Looking to level up your personal growth? TheHealingMindMagazine.com is your go-to resource. Inspiring stories, expert advice, and practical tips to help you grow and thrive. Check it out today, TheHealingMindMagazine.com. And now let's return to our host, Marietta Kammerer.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you, first of all, for listening to Life Talk with Marietta. I have some great guests with us today, Norma Giannatasio and Jean Thompson, and also our Rich Tuthill. And, we're remembering very important times in our lives, and it's really good. It's almost like a refresher course, because what Jean was just talking about, wanting to win that contest with the ice cream, and learning, consistency, and also really wanting something so badly, that ice cream cone for 30 days, and you had to win. And he did it. And, you know, we go through hard times at times, deflated times. Everybody does. And it's good to remember all these things, but we don't, of course. You know, we're far removed from it. So it's good to have these refresher questions tonight where we're remembering all of this. But let's go and move on to our first job. And what did it teach us? Who wants to start with that, Rich?
I did the several different things I mentioned earlier about the little bit of babysitting that I had done. And then my dad's parents belonged to a country club, and my grandpa was a golfer. So I got to actually be a caddy at the golf course that through my grandfather, a little nepotism there. But I enjoyed that because it got me out in the fresh air, which unfortunately nowadays, a lot of kids, that they don't want to go outside at all. Right? They don't know about fresh air. And for a number of years, once I got, I think it was about seventh grade maybe, or eighth grade, they had a job listing on a bulletin board at our school, and I found a card for a woman in my hometown. It's a very small hometown out in Long Island. We only had 2,000 people, so this was very small. And she was looking for somebody to be like a handyman, and I obviously didn't have a driver's license, so she came and picked me up at my house every Saturday morning around 10 o'clock, and I would work for 4, 5, or 6 hours doing a little bit of everything, whether it be mowing her yard or cleaning the basement, sweeping off the driveway, trimming dead branches out of the trees, even things like washing windows, cleaning the bathroom, vacuuming, and a little bit of everything. And she was so much fun that when I went off to college, my sister took over that position, and she went in and did it, and then my cousin did it after that. So she was like a house, almost like part of our family. But that one I did for quite a while. And then after my junior and senior years of high school, I worked in the local grocery store, which was very small, nothing like Big Y and ShopRite nowadays, where you've got like 20 aisles worth of food. We had, I think, 6 aisles, and that was about it. And we only had maybe 10 people that worked in the whole store. And that was fun because several of the folks that worked in there were classmates of mine, and we pretty much knew everybody. And that was nice. But those were the jobs that I had up until I joined the military after my senior in high school.
Oh, you're a good catch, son, Rich. I'll spread the word that you're trained. So that's good to know. That's very good to know. How about you, Gene? What was your first job, and what did it teach you?
Wow, we're going way back. Like I said, unlike Rich, I was kind of different. We were, and I think I told you this before, Marietta, we were extremely poor. Even though we lived in the Garden State of New Jersey, we lived in one of the most poorest parts. It was on the woods. The life was beautiful. You know, as a kid, you could be extremely poor, but if you're happy, you don't know you're poor because you're happy.
Right.
And that's kind of how I was. But I still, you know, we still needed money. So being it was a Garden State, there was a lot of cornfields and horse ranches and tomato fields and strawberries. So they would come at the truck early in the morning, and my mom, they would say, who wants to work today? So we would work in the fields picking whatever, tomato, strawberries or whatever. And I had to be only like maybe 5 years before, like 4 or 5 years old. And I remember this is my first job. The guy came, he picked us up on the truck. Mom said, do you want to go? I said, yeah, I want to go. I'm going to make some money. So I went out, I picked strawberries all day, and I knew the guy said, okay, well, we're going to give you 5 cents for each, you know, the little crate looking things that strawberries come
mm-hmm,
in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
5 cents for each of those. I picked those things all day, and at the end of the day, the guy gave me one dime. I looked at him like a dime after working all day. But I learned something, and I said, I will never underestimate the brilliance of a child. He just thought I was some dumb kid, but I learned kids think too. You cannot outsmart a child. When a child does something, we may think that they don't have the thinking capacity of an adult, but they think. Kids really think. So I learned that I would never do that to a child. I would always respect the child, the way a child thinks, the way a child moves, and just what they have to offer as a human being. But anyway, that was my first job. My second job was I was in a town called Morganville, New Jersey, and it was like a junkyard full of cars. So copper was a big thing, though. So we would go and take the copper out of cars and make, you know, get it by the pound and then go and sell it and get that. So I was kind of self-employed. And then from that point, we moved to another part. My mom moved to Howe Township, New Jersey, where it was near Lakewood. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that, Lakewood, New Jersey. But there was another guy who owned a horse stable where it was an old chicken farm that he bought. And he was converting it into horse stalls for people who wanted to what do you call those kind of horses that you sit behind on the little it's like a little carriage behind it. So anyway, these were like championship bred horses that they ran in Freehold, New Jersey.
Clydesdale?
No, it's not Clydesdale. Clydesdales are more they're those big horses. These are racing horses. They're tall, but they're really sleek. They're racing horses.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, me and my brother, and I, you know, when I look back, Mary, I don't know how I did this. What we did every day, but he paid us pretty good. He gave us sledgehammers, and we would actually break the concrete floor, clean up the concrete floor, take all the concrete and put it out and dispose of it for a truck to come and pick it up to recycle it or whatever. And we did almost half of the whole chicken coop like that. But I learned from that too. It gave me strength. It really toned my body. Every instant that I went through in life gave me a little something. I got a little something out of it that benefited me, even though at the time I'm going, this is hard work. And but at the same time, he taught me how to deal with horses. We would walk the horses. We learned how to feed them. We learned what not to do. I just learned about animals from being there with them. And that was my second job. Then my third job was through the federal government, working at an army base called Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. And so I think I was, 14 years old? And so we went through a government program, and, you know, I made good money there. It was only for the whole summer, so I took all the money, and we bought my mother just beautiful gifts for the house, a television or whatever she needed that she didn't have, because there was 10 of us, and her and my father was divorced at that point. And we didn't have a lot. So whatever she needed, we bought her a dishwasher, a television, and all the things she needed. But I learned a lot, too, from working on the Army base. Everywhere I went, I tried to glean something from my experience on working on these jobs. And I picked up a little bit that actually helped me later in life. And from that point, you know, I did the dumbest thing. 17, I got married. So I had to take a job working. What did I work at that point? I think I worked in a hospital as a janitor. So I did that for a while. And then after that, I joined a band and I became a musician, and that became my job, you know. And from that point, I started getting paid from doing music. And from then on, I've just been, you know, doing music at that from that point. So anyway,
well, you're quite accomplished as a right. Thank you for sharing that. You're quite accomplished because you became also a songwriter, and you wrote songs for the Commodore. And what was the other gentleman? I have him in front of me in my vision, and I can't think of his name. What was the name?
Billy Jane?
No.
Billy Jane? Oh, I'm trying to remember.
You wrote songs for the Commodores, and what was the other?
I worked with Billy Jane. I worked with I inadvertently had stuff with Lionel Richie, but that's a whole other
story. Yeah. But Lionel Richie, that's what I was looking at. I had him in my vision. Anyway, I want to get right back before we go for break. I want to get back to the strawberries because I can relate to that. There's a difference between picking strawberries or finding strawberries. So, and what I learned finding strawberries, that's when the season is almost over. And you see, your eyes don't see strawberries. However, you have to get on your knees and you got to go through each bushel and you find the biggest, sweetest strawberries that are still there. So, and I have I like to find things. I have the endurance. I like to look for things. And not just grab an apple off the tree because I see it. I liked, and especially with strawberries, we had strawberries in our garden. And my mother, every year she had strawberries. And somehow that to me was just something that I was interested in. Finding something that you really don't see. But you know it's there. So I love that. It goes for anything and everything. Even today, the way I work, the way I think, I like to find things. I like to find things, people with exceptional skills and talents. And every day I go on a search, if you will, and that gives me excitement. When I find people that really excite me, people that when I read, you know, whether it's a story on the internet that the local paper did, just so I educate myself a little bit before I see them in person. I can really put a picture together how much of a business person and experience they have by what's written, you know, about them. And I just love to search for exceptional people. It's still in me. And I somehow the strawberries, that's where it started, finding something. I just love that. This challenging myself, something like that. Let's go for a break, and we'll move on afterwards. Thank you.
Ready to showcase your brand to a dedicated audience? Become a sponsor of our show today. Let's grow together. Contact us at 203-505-3660 to get started. Want to soar like an eagle? Stop hanging around turkeys. Surround yourself with those who lift you up and inspire you to reach new heights. Join our Life Talk with Marietta community, 203-505-3660. And let's return to our host, Marietta.
Thank you, Richie. Well, hanging around with turkeys when you should be soaring with the eagles, we know about that. Boy, we can make shows, series of shows. You know, we all had a source of support in our life. Some, it was maybe the parents, the brother, the sister. Norma, I'd like to bring you in. Who was your constant source of support in your life growing up and even during your adult life?
Oh, gee, that covers a lot of territory, a lot of years. When I was littler, it was me and my sister and my brother. We were close, and everything we did was together. But it was really my parents. I had two great parents. As I got older, I guess it was, believe it or not, I'm going to say this, it was my ex-husband, because I married very young. I babysat when I was a kid, and then I had a job at 5 and 10, and then I got married at 19. So I had children right away. I had four of them. But he taught me, I guess he helped me to mature, because I was a 19-year-old girl, and you're not really mature when you're 19 years old. You think you are. So here I am with three kids by the time I'm 27. But because of the kind of man he was, he gave me, he counted on me. And so he made me grow as a person without realizing it. I'm going to give him really credit for that. Even after the divorce, he was someone I could still turn to and still can as of today. But other people were really like people I met through my life, my girlfriends right now. I'm older now, and I don't have anyone special in my life, but I have four or five really close girlfriends, and we're like the golden girls. You know, we're very close. Everything we do, we're there for each other in good times and bad times. Lots of them have lost their husbands. They've either died or they're divorced. So we find ourselves alone, and we really support each other now as I'm older. It's really my girlfriends. But I have to give credit to my ex-husband. I don't know if I had married anybody else at such a young age that I had 20 years where he taught me to grow up. Things didn't go well, but it wasn't because that he wasn't a good person. And he's a hard worker, and he still is today. He works very, very hard. If anything was wrong with our marriage, it was that he was a workaholic. So he taught me to respect that. Even though it damaged things, I still respect a person who puts themselves in their career, whether it's music or art or just working in a factory, you know, which was what he did. But it's just, I just admire people that can throw themselves into their career, be successful, because you can't really, I found out that success doesn't really come unless you've had failures. No one is successful without failures along the way.
Right,
it just doesn't
right.
happen that way unless you're a rock star. I don't know, but I'm sure, you know, he can tell us that rock stars even, you know, have hard times. You hear the Sonny and Cher story, and, you know, they had a rock bottom time, and then they came back. So it's up and down. Bette Midler, there's a lot of people that are very famous today that had very rough times in their careers. So I think that's part of life, is really having to experience the failure to become greater than you thought you could be. And you've experienced that. I know that in your career with the mm-hmm. health issues you had, you have to suffer sometimes to really realize that you're better than you thought you were. And I tell that to my grandkids. You're actually better than you think you are. You just don't even know that yet. You're going to be a better person you ever thought you were going to be, because life is going to teach you that. Mm-hmm. If you show up, Marietta, I think I want that on my tombstone. Just show up. I have no tolerance for people who complain, yet they don't get off the couch. They don't get in their car. They don't get a job. They don't enter into life. They don't live. And I can't understand. You've got to show up for life. You've got to show up for bad things and good things. And if you show up, it works. If you don't show up, nothing's ever going to be successful. You have to show up every day.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, if anybody asked me what I'm grateful about every day, I would say when I'm in touch and in tune with my little girl, with my little child, my inner child, because when I get silly, I feel a lot of strength and a lot of power. And I can just, it's like, and when I let it out, when I'm being silly and, you know, if people are just drawn to that, and that makes me feel so happy. Just feeling that silliness, it could be totally silly thoughts, I could read something or see something and make a little sketch together, you know, in my head. Ridge and I, we talk about that all the time, you know, certain life situations and how to move something into the funny arena, but mm-hmm. I'm not a comedian, so I can't execute it. But it still makes me feel good, that moment. When I feel it, and it's silly, it's mental silliness. Sometimes it's emotional silliness, and I just feel so powerful. And that really, those are very happy moments for me, I have to say. How about you, Rich?
They get you.
Go ahead, Noma.
I was going to say, they get you through the hard times, too. Being
yes.
able to do that in a hard time and making it lighter than it is, or looking at the brighter
lighter.
Side of it, or maybe just the lighter side, where this happened for a reason, and actually laughing at yourself, not taking yourself so seriously, gets you through a lot of tough times. So I agree.
That's so true. Rich, how is it for you?
Well, I grew up out in Long Island, and I would say my parents were probably my role models back then. That they didn't have to rule with an iron fist, that we knew what the boundaries were and the things that we had to do. You knew if you had homework, you better do your homework. They always checked the report cards when they came out throughout the school year. And mine, along with my sisters, we were all pretty good students. We weren't the top ones, but I believe Norma was the one that mentioned about being in the B class, and that's pretty much where
class.
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like the mid-80s, and that's where most of I had some math was my better subject, and I got along pretty good with the math teachers, and they kind of taught me a little bit. But I think the one that once my first big letdown was when I was in high school, I had tried out for the bowling team. I had gotten into bowling through my cousin, and I did not make. I was cut as a freshman in high school, and I was very disappointed because I thought I was pretty good. I knew I wasn't the best. There were some that had been doing a lot longer than me, but it made me work harder over the course of the next year. And then the last 3 years of high school, I did make the team, and I didn't get cut. And of course, once you become an upperclassman, they usually expect that you're going to be there. And so, I mean, that was a minor setback. And then I went to college for one semester in upstate New York, and took two classes that I probably shouldn't have taken, but to be a school teacher, they said you had to take psychology. I got absolutely nothing out of that class. In an auditorium with 400 students, you could barely see the professor unless you're in the first 10 rows. You couldn't hear him on a microphone. So needless to say, I flunked that one, and I also took biology, which I barely made it out of that in high school, and I flunked that one as well. So I flunked out of that school, and it was my grandmother's alma mater. So they had picked up the tab for me to go there. So I felt like I disappointed them, and that's when I joined the Navy. And I think that's where I really grew up, especially I remember in boot camp, my company commander was from Texas, and his favorite line was that he said that your ass is grass and my foot is the lawnmower. So he kicked people in the butt many, many times during the course of our almost 11 weeks there. And we had a lot of guys that just could not handle it. And I was kind of surprised. Because, again, I'm coming from a small farming community, and the majority of the 100, I think we started out with like 115 guys in. It was all guys, and most of them were from New York City, which I always thought the New York City guys were pretty tough. And I just think a pretty good chunk of them dropped out. They just could not handle it, and I made it through, and I learned a lot. It taught you discipline and that you had to be like Norma says you show up, and you knew you had to show up or you were going to be in a lot of trouble. You get into captain's mass when they take you up, kind of like going before a judge type of thing, that they would put some punishment on you if you got in trouble. And I tried to keep my nose clean and through the 6 years. And I've used that throughout the 25 years with Xerox. And again, with choked up that I in 25 years, I missed 3 days. I was there every single day my job, and I took that to heart, that you're being paid by a company to do something. And for my coworkers, I tried to pass that along to them when I would train new employees on occasion, that they would ask me to help out with somebody that was a new hire, and try to impart to them that you show up every day, you do your job. If you have a concern, you talk to a coworker, you've got a manager, and you can get things done.
So you're very grateful for that experience, I can tell.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let us go for a break before we get before we move on. Thanks.
Eagles soar because they focus on greatness. Don't let turkeys hold you down. Surround yourself with those who elevate and inspire you to fly high. Are you aware of how your relationships impact you? Do you choose people who inspire and challenge you, or just those who feel comfortable? Explore insights on personal growth and mindful relationships in the HealingMindMagazine.com. And now let's return to our host, Marietta.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. Life Talk with Marietta. Our topic is reflection of a life well lived. And let's go to challenge and growth. And I'd like to bring Jean in. What was the hardest decision you ever made, you ever had to make in your life?
Wow. I think you should be asking me, what is the dumbest decision I've ever made?
Well, we can get to that too. But no, the hardest.
Well, there's a lot of those. The hardest decision I've ever made. Let me think about that. The hardest decision I've ever made. You know what? The hardest decision I've ever made.
Could be leaving a toxic relationship because it was painful or was necessary, you know, for your mental and emotional well-being. That's very tough to say goodbye. You know, to something like that, where it's, I do, I don't, you know, this kind of seesaw type of thing where you should really leave and you made the decision finally.
Yeah.
And that's it. Those are tough decisions, leaving a person, you know?
Yeah. Well, with my ex-wife, it was, you know, it was kind of easy. But let me see, the toughest decision I ever made, that's a good one for me, the toughest decision I ever made.
I can bring Norma in. I can get right back to you. This way we have a little time to think. Norma, yeah, I'll get right back to you.
That's a quick answer for me, Marietta. There was two. The very first big one was my divorce after 20 years of marriage. I really had, that was tough. That took me a long time to come to terms with ending a marriage and four children later. Not that it wasn't the right thing to do, but as you said, it's very, very hard to go out there on your own and know that you're all by yourself now and you've got to make it work by yourself. And you have these kids that depend on you as well. So that was my biggest tough decision in life. And the other decision was, going to into business for myself and leaving the security of getting a check every week from someone else, working mm-hmm. for other salons, knowing that I was going to get paid, whether it was commission or not. I just knew the money would always be there. But once I went into my own business, being the second biggest decision, it was scary. It's a scary thought that it's all on you. It's all on you. And now you have to seek out the right people, the right atmosphere in the salon, the right people that are going to work well together. Do they have the right skill? Are you savvy enough to do this? Are you smart enough with money to make it work? It's frightening. It's frightening. I saw a sign real quickly. I'm going to tell this cute little story. I saw a sign at one of the islands where we go to up around here. I don't know whether it's Musquamicket or somewhere. It was a little gift shop, and it said, there's two things overrated in the world. It was on a little plaque. I should have bought it. Two things that are overrated in this world. And the first one was having natural childbirth, and the second one was owning your own business. Mm. And I thought it was the funniest plaque ever, especially for a woman, but I related to it now, and I wish I had bought it, because natural childbirth is definitely overrated, and owning your own business is definitely overrated, because it's hard. It's a lot of heartache and it's a lot of hard work. It's worth it, don't get me wrong, but it's tough. It's tough, as you well know. As you well know.
And again,
nobody's
today, you're absolutely right. The problem is there are less and less people are willing to take directives. And, they're good in something. They have a skill and talent, and they just put themselves out there to hang out the shingle, and now they're doing what they think is right. And then somebody comes who's been in business for 30, 40 years, and they see right through it. But they don't let anybody tell them. I had that happening today, but I can't get into it. That's another show. The problem is people don't take directives. That's the problem. You have already lost with that attitude.
Yeah.
You already lost. That's another show. We will definitely have another show.
Yeah.
But I want to bring Jean back in. Love and partnership. What's one thing your partner has taught you? And do you have the answer to what's your hardest decision you ever had to make to get married?
Well, maybe, you know, we don't have much time left. But that was a hard decision. But I did it anyway. I was married twice. Like I said, I jumped out the window at 17 and got married because my girlfriend was pregnant. But that only lasted a couple of years. But that was a very hard decision. But I did it anyway for the sake of my daughter. But I think the hardest thing I had to do was my son, you know, and I know this may sound, you know, kind of dark, but my son out here, he got on methamphetamine and on heroin. And the hardest thing for me would do was to throw him out of the house. That was so hard to do. That was so hard to do. And he's still out there on the street, and I still got to go visit him out there living under bridges now. But that was the hardest thing because I wanted to go along with it and try to ride, but I knew it wasn't going to work because he was just too far gone. So I think that's the hardest thing that I ever had to do was to throw him out on the street. And I just couldn't put up with it anymore. I couldn't bear it. No one could. So anyway, it is what it is. And, you know, that's just one of the things. I'm not the only parent in the country or the world has to deal with that. So I pray for everyone else. But that was my hardest thing. Right there.
That's
what
tough
I learned
love.
From,
that's tough love, Gene. That's hard. Tough love.
Ooh,
tough love is
very
hard.
Yeah,
breaks your heart. Breaks your heart. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us too. Let me go for our last break, and then we'll get right to legacy and impact and what we really would like to leave behind. So let's go for a break.
Unlock the power of your thoughts. The HealingMindMagazine.com offers deep insights to help you understand how you think and how to transform your mindset. No matter how hard life gets, never give up. Tough times don't last, but tough people do. Keep pushing forward. Your breakthrough could be just around the corner. Now let's return to Marietta.
All right. Legacy and impact, and we're talking about reflection of a life well-lived. So what do you want people, or what do you hope that people remember about you, Norma?
Oh, gee, that I'm just a good person, and I want the best for everyone. You know, just that's it. Live your life. Be happy. Don't judge. You know, that's all. You know, I'm trying to live the rest of my life, however long it may be that way. Just not judging anyone, being there if you need me, and taking care of myself. Just a good person. I think the nicest thing I could say about somebody is they're good people. Good people.
Okay. How about you, Jean? Gino, are you with us? Hello?
I'm sorry, I had the phone on mute. I just want people to remember me, I guess, for contributing something to their life that had meaning or could help them grow in some kind of a way. And just be remembered, like Norma said, it's just a good person that tried to be the best I could to everyone that I crossed, you know, because those are the only things you could take with you when you leave this planet. It's only what you've done for other people in their lives. You know, no one's going to remember anything else. You know, I've been to many funerals, even my own family, and nobody ever talks about how much money they had or what they were successful at. It was always what they contributed into that person's life in a time of need or whatever. So that's what I would, you know.
That's what you would say. How about you, Rich?
I would think that what I would like to have people remember me is that I was a good guy. I was reliable. I was never married, don't have kids, so I didn't have to deal with that end of it. But I have nieces and nephews, and they have called me the goofy uncle. So I hope that they would remember me in that respect, that I always had fun with them, but I didn't take any nonsense from them. So I kind of was like a third parent for them and just giving them a little bit of direction, but reliable, doing at work all those years with Xerox, that I always told my coworkers that if I can't get along with somebody, whether it's a coworker or a management or especially customers, that there was a problem, because I can pretty much get along with anybody. And I did have a few over the years. When you're dealing with people for 25 years, you're going to run into a conflict occasionally. But fortunately, it was very few and far between. And I think just being the good guy who was reliable and could be there if you need my help with something.
Thank you, Rich. And as conclusion, as we reflect on the tapestry of our lives, it becomes clear that every moment, big or small, has contributed to who we are today. Our experiences, relationships, and challenges have shaped our character and guided us toward growth and understanding. So my advice as a mover and shaker, but I have to rethink that too, what I want on my stone. Have to rethink this. So, you know, I'm not going to share too much. But my advice is treasure the present, learn from the past, and never stop looking forward. Embrace life with curiosity, kindness, and resilience. Your story is still being written, and each day offers a new opportunity to make it meaningful. Live with purpose and leave a legacy of love and wisdom for those who follow. It's right in here. She lived with purpose. I can really, truly say, I just got it here in my closing statement. She lived with purpose. That I can truly say. And it's honest. It's with honesty. And that, to me, is wealth. It's not the dollar figures. That would be nice, too. But that's another show. But she lived with purpose. And I love that, you know, because that's the truth. So I want to thank Jean for joining us tonight. Norma G. Rich, okay. Thank you very much. And we'll see you real soon. And, you know, thank you for sharing your life stories. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And good night.
Night, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.